Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Grab your pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned. We're gonna gather, and we're gonna march, and we're gonna blow its f***ing house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. Today is another off-schedule episode. Don't get used to this. but you may have heard in recent days that the state of Texas here in the United States instituted what everyone is calling the Texas abortion ban, basically in which the state criminalized receiving an abortion after 6 weeks. Now, after 6 weeks from what, you might ask? That is one of the many questions that a lot of people have been trying to parse out, trying to find answers to. And when I don't know what I'm talking about, I look to the voices of experts. And I am really pleased to be able to tell you that Dr. Leah Torres agreed to come back to the show. She was on several years ago to talk about reproductive health and some other things. But Dr. Torres runs one of the largest reproductive health centers in the state of Alabama. Since the last time she was on the show, she moved to take over one of the largest clinics in Alabama and is doing some amazing work there. And she took the time to break down what this new law means, what other states might be looking to institute laws like this, what this means to healthcare providers for people who can get pregnant, how this affects you, whether or not you live in the state of Texas, and where we go from here, including the question that a lot of people are wanting to know, is Roe v. Wade on the chopping block for this Supreme Court? This is a really timely discussion, so I didn't think that it was something that should be shoved into a regularly scheduled episode, given that the conversation on this is currently evolving. But this is a big conversation with a lot of nuance, and I didn't feel that it was right to stick on a blog or just put a link out there on social media. I wanted to be able to actually have a real conversation to provide to you all so that you can keep abreast of what is happening in the world. I'm firmly and fully believe, as you all know, that we should be more than just spiritual people. We are a whole being. Our entire being is all of us all at once. And I think that that means that sometimes being part of some of the tougher conversations facing society and culture today, not just facing our spiritual our spiritual paths or our spiritual growth, because we are part of the community at large, and these kinds of topics, these kinds of questions affect our community too. So I am so pleased to provide to you all this conversation with Dr. Leah Torres.
Dr. Leah Torres, welcome back to Inciting a Riot. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for taking the time and interest and having me on. I appreciate it.
You have been on the show before, but for folks that don't know who you are, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself and your practice?
Sure. I'm an OBGYN, and I am currently in Alabama, where I am taking care of Alabamians and providing abortion care as well as expanding care at our clinic to include regular GYN and prenatal care services, also expanding to do telehealth medicine. I came here in order to provide full spectrum reproductive health care to folks in the South. And I firmly believe that everyone is deserving of compassionate, high quality, evidence-based health care. People deserve it and they need to be able to access it. And that is why I'm here.
Well, I'm so glad that you do that work. And I'm so glad that you're willing to talk about it here. No beating around the bush here. We have had some pretty big headlines in the United States, certainly, in the last week regarding access to reproductive health care, specifically in the state of Texas. I know that you've had your own sort of personal battles with trying to continue to provide health care, but I know that this particular issue hits home for you in a big way because it's the work that you do. So for folks that don't know, or for folks that are trying to sort of keep up with the mess that is the current news cycle, to the best of your ability, what is this new piece of legislation that was handed down in Texas?
Well, first I want to be sure that everybody understands the gravity of the situation. It's not so much that Texas did a thing. The bigger picture is that the Supreme Court allowed it. And in general terms, what Texas did was say, we're going to pass an unconstitutional law. And the Supreme Court said, cool, no problem. So, you know, bringing it to its basic facts, I also want to make sure that people understand it's not an abortion ban. Abortion is still legal in all 50 states. What has happened is Texas has significantly reduced the ability to access abortion health care in a timely fashion. And in fact, you know, banning it, making abortion after 6 weeks illegal / inaccessible counters their prior legislation, which is people need time to make a decision about abortion, so we're going to make them wait 24 hours or 48. I can't remember what Texas is at. It's a moot point at any rate. So let's remember all of the hypocrisy in this, where on the one hand, they've said people need time to make the decision about having an abortion, so we're going to force a waiting period on them. And then they say, except you have to make your decision before you're 6 weeks pregnant. So those are completely on its face antithetical. Mm-hmm. And you cannot rationalize or logistic yourself out of that paradox. The other thing that, of course, Texas has done is say that Joe down the street can stand outside of a healthcare clinic and sue the healthcare provider inside, sue the patient inside, sue the family of the patient inside, all the while not worrying themselves about incurring any legal fees because the defendants will be ultimately responsible for anything if they don't win the lawsuit. I mean, this is, needless to say, unprecedented, but also what does that even look like? We don't know. Mm-hmm. So while people are calling this an abortion ban, this is actually an autonomy ban. Abortion is still legal. What they have done is removed someone's autonomy over their health and life decisions, and they've removed bodily sovereignty. People need to be able to make their own healthcare decisions without the assistance of some legislator in office.
The lawsuit piece that you're talking about is getting quite a lot of headlines, has been really a focus of a lot of social media attention, likening the law in Texas to creating a Handmaid's Tale scenario, because like what you were saying, a bystander, if they suspect that you are getting an abortion, if you have aided someone in getting an abortion, if you have provided an abortion, if you drove someone to the clinic, if you, whatever, if you in any way were part of someone receiving an abortion in the state of Texas, a bystander can say, can report you, can sue you, and what the fine's, what, $10,000 plus obviously like court fees, the fees to retain an attorney and all of that. Is that right, to the best of your knowledge?
To the best of my knowledge, right. And the point is, of course, to instill fear in people. The unprecedented unknown is a big factor here because people don't know what could happen. I mean, people generally know if you speed, you will probably get pulled over and get a traffic ticket. Like, that is a consequence mm-hmm. that you understand of speeding potentially. So this is nobody knows what can happen. Nobody knows how it's going to happen. And so that instills fear in people. And so I want to also communicate that this is a law that applies to and within Texas. So I, for example, can donate money to funds inside of Texas, but I'm outside of Texas. So I'm safe, essentially. That being said, the other side of things is that I could also sue somebody, actually. So it's all very... The purpose is to make people fearful. The purpose is to put legal fear into people so that they don't try and help, and to confuse everyone so that the safest thing to do is to do nothing. And that's exactly what they want. If I can, I mean, on Twitter, if the best people to follow here are, you know, Imani Gandhi at Angry Black Lady and Jess Piclo at Hegemommy, and their podcast is Boom Lawyered. They just did an episode when the Supreme Court decided to do nothing, and they kind of explained all of this and what it means. And so it's 20 minutes, and they run through it, and they're, attorneys, and so they understand all of the legalese that I don't. But it's the idea is that they have the legislators have instilled a fear in people. And so that makes them more powerful.
And the 6-week piece, I just want to make sure that people are really specific here because understand the details here. Because from what I understand, it isn't necessarily 6 weeks from conception. I'm using air quotes, which people that are listening to this on an audio format won't see, but it's not 6 weeks from the act itself. It's 6 weeks from your last menstrual period.
From the first day of your last menstrual period. So
from the first day of your last menstrual period.
So you've got 4 weeks there where you're expecting to get a period that you just don't even worry about things.
Right.
But if 2 weeks earlier you got pregnant, then you're like, when you expect your period to come, you're like 2 weeks pregnant, maybe a week. I mean, the biology is complicated and everybody's body is different. So this is really, if you want to get it down to brass tacks, if I go by the basic, most basic math, at 4 weeks, if you're supposed to have your period, you're probably 1 to 2 weeks pregnant. Add another 2 weeks, you're probably 3 to 5 weeks pregnant. Did I do that math right? Anyway, it's what you wouldn't even see it on an ultrasound is kind of the idea here. The pregnancy is so early that you're unlikely to see it on an ultrasound is how they've done the math.
And of course, just not to put too fine a point on it, but the lawsuit aspect of it, and I'll obviously link to that longer legal, because you're a medical doctor, you're not a lawyer, and I'm not a lawyer. So discussing the legal ins and outs of it is not something that either of us is probably qualified to do. You can obviously talk about how it will impact abortion providers and abortion laws in the state generally. But the actual legal, you know, standing and things like that is best left up to attorneys. So I'll link to that. But from what I understand, the fine of $10,000, if it is found that a defendant in the case did indeed either give an abortion or aid in an abortion, the $10,000 fine goes to the plaintiff. So yes. I can just start suing people and I make money. I mean, this is about to be a cottage industry. And in fact, from what I understand, private companies and private organizations have already started creating like tip websites. And I think people think, I mean, let me put myself into the mindset of somebody that considers themselves anti-choice and thinks that they're doing the right, the air quotes, right thing. So I go to this website that I think is created from an altruistic place. Oh, we are an organization that wants to make sure that children are born or whatever.
Sure.
And I start funneling them all of these tips. I'm not the one suing them. This company, this organization is, you know, probably has the means and resources to send out lawsuits. And if they do it enough, they'll eventually start making money and income off of it. So already there are organizations and corporations and businesses that have seen this as a money-making business opportunity. And I say that because it's interesting, because there are TikTok activists that have already created like algorithmic codes that are flooding these particular websites with fake reports to hopefully shut the websites down. Because if you don't shut the websites down, then suddenly these corporations and organizations and, you know, nonprofits or whatever behind them are just going to start making a residual income, basically, off of tips.
Exactly right. And that's the, you know, the idea is, the idea, to use a term that I did not invent, and I'm not sure who invented it, but, you know, it's financial terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't have money to defend themselves against lawsuits left and right. I was not involved in a lawsuit per se, but I did have legal actions taken against my license, and it cost over $100,000 to get my license back. Second most expensive piece of paper I own. My first most expensive is my medical degree. So that's real. And that was just one entity. And I just can't imagine trying to whack-a-mole all these people who think that they have a right to insert themselves into my patient's healthcare. Like, that's just beyond bizarre to me. And the Supreme Court has basically said, there is no right to privacy. HIPAA doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Your right to the lifelong pursuit of happiness is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the highest court in the land does not recognize people as human beings with basic human rights, we don't have a court in the land. We don't have a highest court. So it's really just, at this point, a free-for-all. And I do not understand what is happening.
Yeah, it's there are certainly a lot of pieces of this, and none of them feel good. I mean, when you can sue someone and the patient must give you $10,000 and the Uber driver, you know, whoever takes you to the clinic owes you $10,000. The doctor owes you $10,000. Everybody in the clinic that works for the clinic owes you $10,000. I mean, suddenly, you know, one abortion makes somebody somewhere that's doing these lawsuits tens of thousands of dollars per time. So I want to move on from that and ask specifically, because you brought it up earlier, the fact that so many people don't know that they're even pregnant by then, don't even know that they're, you know, and so just in your medical expertise, in the history of your practice, when does the average person tend to know that they are pregnant?
It's all over. I mean, mm-hmm. I couldn't even say. I'm sure there's data out there to say the majority of people, like, but that is frankly irrelevant. Mm-hmm. People have irregular periods. They expect their period every 6 or 8 weeks. So it's really hard. I mean, that's not uncommon, or at least it's common enough that I wouldn't be able to make a generalization. But really, it shouldn't matter when you realize that you're pregnant, because if you're pregnant, you should be able to decide what happens to that pregnancy. Full stop. You should be able to decide that you're going to continue the pregnancy and give birth, or not continue the pregnancy and have an abortion. That is a basic, fundamental human right. People don't have to like abortion, but even, you know, people don't have to like colonoscopies either, but that's all part of the healthcare system. Healthcare is helping people live their healthiest life, mm-hmm. right? Pregnancy changes physiology. That's why we have a term in medicine called maternal physiology, because it is different and distinct from physiology when you were not pregnant. There are changes that the body undergoes, and they are permanent and they are lifelong. There are risks to your health and life that you undertake by continuing a pregnancy and giving birth. People need to be able to do that out of their own free will, and not because the government said that they have to. And what is happening right now is the government is saying, after 6 weeks, you have to. Mm. And that is not okay. By any medical standard, by any principal medical ethic, there are four principal medical ethics: autonomy, justice, beneficence, and non-maleficence. They are written into the American Medical Association. They are part of the World Health Organization. They are part of standard medical practice. And what the Supreme Court has just done is said those medical ethics are irrelevant.
I am curious, again, in your experience and expertise, do you think this is going to prevent abortions in Texas?
Abortions have been happening since people have been getting pregnant. That's just historical fact. So, no, I think it's going to make it harder. I think people are going to sometimes not be able to get the abortion that they want and need. And that's going to result in a higher maternal mortality rate. So more pregnant moms are going to die, basically, in layman's terms. That's math. You can't change math. Math is a thing. It's just numbers, 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 right? If you have a percentage, which is the rate of how many people die in childbirth, well, that percentage is a thing that we understand to exist. And if you increase the denominator, meaning more pregnant people, using that percentage, the numerator, people dying in pregnancy, is going to increase as well. So that's a math equation. It is not hyperbole to say that this will result in people's preventable deaths. Our maternal mortality rate in this country is already inexcusably high. And now we're going to make it worse voluntarily. It doesn't make sense.
And I think that we would be remiss if we didn't expressly say it out loud that wealthy, cisgender, heteronormative white people have always been able to, at least in this country, no matter what the laws were, have always been able to access abortions. There's that dark humor joke that goes around every time some conservative politician discusses abortion access. reproductive rights, that, well, Republican politicians' wives have always had access to abortion and will continue to have access to abortion. They can fly to another state. They can pay a doctor. They can pay for privacy. And they have the money to make sure that other people stay quiet. In your experience, does the dark humor match up with reality? And do you foresee this negatively impacting people of color, trans people, queer people, and folks that don't fit into that white wealthy stereotype?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you are not a white cis heterosexual male in this country, you are oppressed and you are subject to the consequences of these oppressive laws, especially if these oppressive laws are revoking your very own bodily autonomy. So we already have an increased maternal mortality rate among women of color. So people of color are dying more frequently, 3 to 4 times more often than their white counterparts in this country. And that is not based on anything other than systemic racism. So this does feed into the systemic racism that our country has. Our country also already has an atrocious history of reproductive coercion. Forced sterilization among poor people or people that, you know, were just deemed not fit for reproduction, not fit to procreate, were sterilized against their will. And guess what? Those people were generally poor people, people of color. So now what we're saying is, instead of forcing a sterilization procedure, now we're just going to force a life-threatening pregnancy on them. So they might die in childbirth, and that's fine because, you know, they're people of color and we have, you know, rampant systemic racism. So that's apparently okay. I mean, they know what they're doing. This, anything having to do with reproductive coercion, is racist. It is misogynist. It is targeting the, you're not a white guy, then, you know, you're targeted. I mean, that's our history, that we're just, it's just a different side of the same coin. And it's infuriating because here we are, we know how to prevent maternal mortality rates from going up. And we're doing the exact opposite. You know, having access to healthcare is a very good way to prevent people from dying in childbirth.
I know that clinics like Planned Parenthood and other clinics that you typically think of when you think of abortion access or reproductive care tend to be places that lower income people, queer people, people of color can access healthcare, just generally speaking. I think when you were on the show previously, we sort of parsed out the fact that Planned Parenthood is not it isn't some kind of like drive-through abortion clinic or something like that. It's mostly reproductive health. It's mostly a healthcare clinic. Is that right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they're a national organization that provides healthcare that is reputationally known to be compassionate, evidence-based, non-judgmental, and that's what people seek. You know, they know that if they are not the conservative, evangelical, right, cishet white guy, that they can go to Planned Parenthood and not be judged, and they can go to Planned Parenthood and get good health care. That's what I'm trying to do here in Alabama, is make our clinic here that as well. So it's needed. And Planned Parenthood is, you know, of course, a target because they are a national organization that provides compassionate, non-judgmental health care to everyone. And that's a threat to the patriarchy. That's a threat to our systemic racism. That's a threat to the powers that be, because the powers that be earn money from their, you know, extreme views. I mean, it's all about money and power. You just follow it that way. And that's why there's such anti-abortion feelings, because that's a money generator. you know, you get up on your podium and you talk about how abortion is murder, people will throw money at you. So why would you stop saying that?
And of course, you know, I hate to keep harping on the same point, but, you know, you add in $10,000 a pop per case, per person in that case. So it could be easily $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 per lawsuit that's awarded to a plaintiff that has to be paid out by plus legal fees, plus court, plus time, plus all of that. It seems like a really good way to not just effectively end abortion access in the state of Texas, but also to shut down clinics.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can't afford to pay millions of dollars in legal fees. I mean, that's the reality that they have created. And so I know that, first of all, it doesn't stop with Texas, obviously, because the Supreme Court has said other states can do this because the Supreme Court is over everybody. So Texas is the first stop among many. Also, blue states need to know that they do fall under the purview of the Supreme Court. So laws will be passed eroding away access to reproductive health care, access to abortion care in blue states as well. So the idea that, you know, it's egregious, it's costly, and it's intentional. And it's intentional because it's not going to stop at Texas. So I do need everybody to understand what this means. This means it's going to be everywhere unless the Supreme Court stops it, unless we stop it, unless we do something.
From what I understand, about 12 other states previously tried to pass similar legislation. It's just those 12 states weren't under this current Supreme Court. I'm off on my time here.
There's legislation ready to go for an actual overturning of Roe v. Wade, which this is not, because of course you can still obtain an abortion in Texas. Therefore, it is not overturning Roe v. Wade. It is merely, we're on the 2-yard line, like, to use a football example. Like, it's just a matter of time. It's very, very concerning when the government, it's very concerning when the government over decades has done nothing. I mean, let's remember, this isn't a surprise. No one should be shocked by this. I mean, it's bad, and it's in that sense shocking. But no one who cares about access to reproductive health care is surprised. We have been saying this for decades. And every time, oh, it's just a 24-hour ban. Oh, well, yeah, okay, 48 hours, but we can deal with that. That's a weekend. And all of the, you know, death by 1,000 paper cuts, that's what it is. No one here is surprised. What I am so shocked by, though, is our government continues down the same path, despite healthcare providers saying, this isn't right. People are going to get hurt. People are being hurt. People are dying. Do something. Well, I mean, I really don't know what the excuse is. I don't know. And we have to stop whatever excuses we're using. And actually,
Justice Brett Kavanaugh called
to protect the basic
Roe v. Wade a super precedent
in this country.
Do what? Well, I only bring it up because during his Supreme Court nomination and confirmation process, he was asked directly about Roe v. Wade. In fact, most of the recent Supreme Court nominees were, all of the ones that came out under our previous administration, because so many people seem to be rightly afraid that abortion access is now going to be on the chopping block. And it does seem with this recent allowance by the Supreme Court to let the Texas ban go into effect, that might be a direction that it's going. But I digress. Brett Kavanaugh said in his confirmation proceedings that Roe v. Wade was a super precedent, meaning that he felt that Roe v. Wade was so established and so entrenched that you could never overturn it, that no future court could ever overturn it. Do you believe Justice Kavanaugh when you hear him say that Roe v. Wade is a super precedent? Do you think that Roe v. Wade is going to be on the chopping block?
Let's remember that Roe v. Wade is a Supreme Court decision, and it is not law. It is a Supreme Court decision, and decisions can change. I believe that when he called it a super precedent, he was telling folks what they wanted to hear because he was not in his seat. Now he's in his seat. And now the Supreme Court has voted 5-4 that people's autonomy does not matter. I mean, Justice Sotomayor wrote an accurate dissent. I don't understand how any Supreme Court justice, first of all, is either right or left. Justice is supposed to be blind. And yet we have just entirely accepted the fact that we have conservative and liberal or right or left Supreme Court justices. And that just, in my mind, does not make any sense. Because what the Supreme Court is supposed to do is supposed to uphold the Constitution. And they have just brilliantly failed in doing that. And so what? Like, what does that mean? I don't know. I don't know the answer. What I do know is that over the decades, we have accepted putting people in positions of power who do not value those that they view beneath them. Namely, I'll cisnormative here in a second, but women. You know, we elected someone who felt that he was immune to any consequences from sexual assault. Then we put another one. I mean, we've put a few justices like that in the Supreme Court, right? One became president, more than one became president, right? I mean, let's be honest. it's a reflection. It's like, it's looking in a mirror. It's a reflection of our society. When we put predators in power, we cannot be surprised when we are attacked by those people. So the misogyny is real. The patriarchy is real. The systemic racism is real. And we can't just, shiny thing over here, look over here. I mean, that's what happens. We shiny thing over here, and then we forget that we have Brett Kavanaugh as a Supreme Court justice, that we have Amy Coney Barrett as a Supreme Court justice, who is a tool of the patriarchy. Like, it benefits her to fall in line, right? So when are we going to fix the system that is working exactly as it was designed? It's not broken. This was put in place by racist landowners who did not view women as people, who did not view people of color as people. This is the same system. And it's still working as it was designed back in the 1700s. Why?
Is there any other future legislation that you're watching? Is there anything else that people should be concerned about other than these time limit bans, which do seem like, I mean, if it's going to be successful in Texas, other states are going to do this. It's not a, oh gosh, what if other states do this? There are somewhere, there is some Chad who is gleefully typing up a new piece of legislation for another state out there in the United States. What's next? Is there something else that we need to be concerned about? Is there something that we aren't talking about that we should be?
I mean, aside from the blatant people will die and those who are pregnant are no longer subjected
to other than that
having their basic human rights recognized. I mean, this is other than the, you know, tyrannical fascism that is in our country's upper offices, this is just, I mean, it's just more of the same, which is what's so painful. So like, what to look out for? Look out for what we've been telling you for the past 50, 60, 200 years. I mean, let's go back to the suffrage movement. Let's go back to, you know, the Reconstruction era. Let's go back to, I mean, this is not new. We keep doing this. We've got to believe that voting matters, because that's the most powerful tool that we have. Our government really is of the people, for the people, by the people, if we make it that way. But somehow we've lost track and lost sight of our power, and that's intentional. That's the gaslighting that has happened. So we need to vote. We need to pay attention to who's running for what, specifically locally. And from there, maybe we can get the right people in office to do their job. Meanwhile, the current people in office need to do their job. Mm-hmm. Because the times of let's find a compromise are over when you decide that I don't have basic human rights. That's done. That is not
negotiable. I do love how no matter what expert that I talk to, I talk to climate change experts and legal experts and medical experts and stuff about lots of different kinds of topics that are important to us as a culture, as a society. And it does seem like there's one consistent next step, and that's vote, and that's make sure that you're voting, that's make sure that you're eligible to vote, make sure that you are informed on the issues, and make sure that you actually show up to vote. So I think that is an excellent, it's a free thing that everyone can do. And more places are looking at allowing you to continue to do it, just like we did in the last election, looking at allowing you to continue to do it either by mail or remotely. And that is available in a lot of places as well. Dr. Leah Torres, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Thank you so much for being here. If folks want to find out a little bit more about you, your platform, your practice, where can people go to do that?
I am on Twitter at Leah N as Nancy Torres, and usually I'm tweeting my brains out. Also, we are at West Alabama Women's Center. That is the healthcare center where I provide healthcare. So, I'm usually available on Twitter. I want to be sure that everybody has access to accurate information. So please do check your sources. Make sure that you're well-informed and not just informed by whatever resource seems convenient at the time.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Torres. You have a good rest of your day. Thanks for being here on Inciting a Riot.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, rioters, that is going to do it here for us today. Thank you all so much for tuning in to this timely discussion, and my esteemed thanks to
my guest, Dr. Leah Torres, for dropping everything and hopping on to have this urgent discussion. If you like this show and what we're doing and you'd like to support it, there are a number of ways to help. You can consider liking and sharing it on social media. If you like the episode that you're listening to, hit that share button and help people that like things that you do, find the show. You can also rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're downloading the show and leave a review. We are finding out more and more as creators that literally just any review, an emoji, one word, a thumbs up, put in that comment section, and it seriously gasses up the presence in the algorithm, which is the great and mighty way that other people find the show. Help keep the show free and producing on a regular basis by chipping in whatever you can. You can buy me a coffee, which is a one-time monetary donation of your choosing, or join my Patreon on a monthly basis. Patrons receive additional audio and video content, as well as archived episodes, a private Discord server, and monthly chats with special guests. This month is pretty special because it is the month that I am putting out my very first book, so all of the patrons are invited to a special roundtable discussion with me. So as my way of saying thank you. So more details about that and how to support the show are at patreon.com/incitingariot. Quick note, I did update the URL because I don't know why it wasn't the same as everything else. So there you go. patreon.com/incitingariot. You can pre-order my book, the book I was just talking about, The Dabbler's Guide to Witchcraft, at bit.ly/dabblersguide. It comes out everywhere books are sold September 28th, later this month. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I appreciate this. Please stay safe out there and make sure you're registered to vote. I will leave you, but as always, I will leave you with love and light, firelight.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.